AM Emory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News,
app.
I'm Michelle Franzen. Tropical storm Ophelia sweeping in on the first day of fall, making landfall along North Carolina's coast this morning and churning up the eastern seaboard. ABC's Victor Okendo is in Wrightsville Beach.
A state of emergency here and in Virginia. The rain has just been relentless. Now some 8 million Americans are under tropical storm warnings. Maximum sustained winds right around 70 miles per hour, but some of the gusts of wind that we felt here in Wrightsville Beach, much stronger than that.
A government shutdown looking more likely, with funding set to run out September 30th. That could impact up to 4 million federal employees who would lose pay until Congress can hammer out a stopgap measure or passes spending packages. In France, Pope Francis leading Mass today in the port city of Marseille. Earlier, he called on European leaders to open their ports to migrants fleeing hardship. It comes as many boats carrying migrants have been blocked from arriving or turned away. This is ABC News. Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas and Honduras's president visiting McAllen, Texas today, looking for ways to mitigate the swell of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border. The Biden administration also deploying 800 additional troops at the border and granted nearly 500,000 Venezuelan migrants temporary legal status, all so they can go to work here in the U.S. ABC's Jacqueline Lee says other cities are also grappling with the surge.
In L.A., dozens of migrants arriving on buses waiting to be processed. New York City overwhelmed with migrants for months, updating its policy, issuing 30-day notices to adult asylum seekers to help them reach their final destination in transition to alternate housing. In Chicago, the situation's so bad, the surge of buses bringing migrants into the city, forcing them to sleep on the floors of police stations.
A ceasefire agreement between Armenia and Azerbaijan has been reached to end fighting in the separatist region. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Bar for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. New polling suggests most Americans support efforts to boost renewable energy. Local governments say they're doing what they can. Here's Mike Mohn.
The survey data from the Pew Research Center finds that two-thirds of U.S. adults say America should prioritize developing sources like wind and solar over fossil fuels. Madison Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway says at the local level, elected officials are becoming increasingly aware that climate threats are no longer just a future scenario to deal with.
We have to prepare for the impacts that we know are here and are coming. And we have to reduce our emissions so that they don't get worse in the future. And we have to do both of those things at the same time.
The mayor offered those comments in a panel discussion led by the Center for American Progress. She says federal policies such as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act are helping cities fund climate-friendly projects. But she adds most local governments, especially in smaller towns, still lack key staffing to carry out the work. She notes the infrastructure laws giving Madison more flexibility to gain steam on certain projects.
Both our John Nolan Drive bridges to be safer, more pedestrian and bike friendly with better stormwater management. We also just built a new pedestrian and bike bridge over a critical intersection.
As for other hurdles to clear, the mayor says there's still room for improvement in getting the word out to local residents and businesses about tax incentives to make their own clean energy investments. And lingering supply chain issues are another factor municipalities face in trying to get more of these projects off the ground. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome back to this, our second hour here of our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion involving you too in the most important news stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in our nation. Always delighted to have your phone calls, your questions, your comments, perspectives at 844-967-2789. You can also go on the Civic Media website, find your broadcast station, find the Morning Cannolis folder, and send us a text also about your questions or comments. Delighted to have your participation in our program every Saturday morning. And that includes some callers on the line right now. Joe, first from Madison, delighted to have you with us, Joe. Your comment or question today?
Thanks, Jim. Great show, as always. Chock full of information, which is so helpful to get a better picture of things.
Thank you. I wanted
to return just briefly to a subject you brought up in the first hour, which was the situation of the Alabama not responding properly to the directions given to it by the Supreme Court to address problems with their voting rights situation and the refusal, basically, to follow the dictates that the Supreme Court had ordered. I'm curious, as a prosecutor, as you look at that, Jim, if there's continued defiance of this, how does that work exactly? I understand with, you know, George Wallace and the integration of schools, he stood on the steps and they employed the federal marshals to ensure that the children got into schools or college students too to be able to get the education they should have access to. But how would this work in terms of ensuring that how would you see this working in terms of ensuring that there is a proper maps drawn and that they accept them and implement them? I mean, would they have to have federal marshals implement them? I'm curious about that, your reaction to that. Thanks very much, Jim.
Joe, as always, a great question, and it's one that I pondered as well as we think, you know, when is this going to end, which is really at the focus of your question. We would certainly hope that if the United States Supreme Court for a second time sometime soon says, no, we're reaffirming our position, you need to have these maps drawn, and they will be drawn now, not by the legislature, but rather by the special master and by the cartographer. They're going to be imposed upon you. And I think, Joe, that's the real crux of your question, right? Now we've got a legislature unhappy with what has happened to this point and no longer in control of the future of this. So the practical question is, how do you enforce that? Let's assume that sometime soon we get the report from the special master reporting back to the Fifth Circuit panel, reporting from the cartographer. Here is the map. Here are the lines that need to be drawn for the 2024 election. This is what will now happen in the state of Alabama. The difference, Joe, I think, between what you appropriately described as our past history, you can have marshals, you can have nationalized law enforcement, quite literally with guns, bringing people into school to ensure that the mandates of the Supreme Court are followed in Brown versus Board of Education. You can do that physically, as uncomfortable and as frankly terrible as it is to do, that we've got to enforce the education principles under the Constitution at the long end of a rifle, if you will. The question here is, let us suppose that The legislature there, they plainly will continue to object to this. What happens? How do you actually enforce this on the ground? Do you have individuals go into the specific offices of the Alabama legislature, the Secretary of State, those people who quite literally put together the ballots, put together the information about how these lines are going to be drawn and direct the printers to do it? What is the mechanism for accomplishing all of this? We haven't gone down this road before, much if at all. And so we need to see what will happen here. Presumably, even though it would be a great resource intensive to do this, if the Supreme Court says we're doing this, we're reaffirming what the lower court has said, and the map gets issued by the lower court through the cartographer, through the special master, and the Alabama folks, the leaders of Alabama generally, in the executive branch, legislative branch, continue to say we're not doing this. At some point, that's right. That's right. The federal government's then got to get involved, quite literally, I suppose, in going into those specific offices and saying, this is what you will announce, and we're going to change. We're going to print the directives. We're going to describe these maps in the way that the Court of Appeals has said. It raises all kinds of questions about how you would accomplish this. I don't have the answers, just because, again, you would assume that at some point the folks there would say, all right, we have lost this decisively. We still need to follow the law. But what if they say no? What if they say, like George Wallace, we're not doing this at all? Does the court then have the obligation, perhaps through the Department of Justice, as we did back in the 1950s, to compel, through some forced presence in the state of Alabama, the creation of ballots and the creation of maps and the creation of other the other trappings of the upcoming election that are right now not in place? We have to see how this plays out. It underscores, Joe, your great question, the extraordinary nature of this, right? That, again, even though we may not like what the Supreme Court has done on this broadcast and others, we've talked about the things that reasonable people can disagree on and those things that, frankly, reasonable people should all agree on. And sometimes the Supreme Court has run afoul of those commonly understood principles of how our nation should go forward. But we still follow the law. We may not like the decision in Dobbs. We may not like some of the decisions having to do with the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, other things out there with student loan forgiveness, even decisions about admissions into universities. We may like those. We may not like those. But we follow the law because that is the rule of law. That's justice in America. If we've got a state that continues to be violative of that, we are quite literally at a crossroads. No clear understanding about how this would happen. You would hope that reasonable minds would prevail, and finally this would happen. Great question, Joe. Great observation about the impact, depending upon what the Court of Appeals does and what the Supreme Court does, as this matter is still unresolved today. Thank you so much for the call and the comment and the good question there. Mark is also on our line. Mark, your comment or question this morning about any of our topics.
Yeah, the fake electors thing comes into it, as well as the continual, what I would say is, attempt to abridge the right, our rights under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, that have those votes, our votes actually recognized, because it's guaranteed there that not only the our choice, the voters' choice of electors for President of the United States, but also our choices in terms of our legislative offices, also judicial officers. And the operative phrase, as I see it, is, or in any way, abridged. I don't quite understand the remedies that it proposes for it under the 14th Amendment, Section 2. But reinforcing the 14th Amendment is also, Amendment 15, which guarantees a right based on race or contiguous condition of servitude, the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed women the right to vote, the 24th Amendment, which forbids poll taxes, and the 26th Amendment, which provides, for 18-year-olds to vote, and the continued attempt on the basis of part of our legislature, or the proposals coming out that, for example, one to change so where students would have to vote for their home district, wherever that may be, regardless of the fact they may have actually lived to qualify as an elector, which is a voter, they've lived in a district for 30 days, and that they should have the right to vote in that particular district. And that I would propose that those of these people that actually have come out now and want to impeach not only Judge Protasiewicz, but also to impeach Megan Wolf, are in violation of at least the spirit of the Constitution you know, that as given out on both a federal cons-